Okay. Well, I'm going to try to move along, and now I've got a lot of slides to go here, and your participation has been really good. So what I'm going to do is just stop at a couple, two or three points along the way, and I'll try not to go through them too quickly. But if you want to stop, then just say, "Hey, I want to ask you a question." Okay, we'll just do it like that. And we'll try to get through the end. Okay. St. Paul said in Romans 19 and 20, he says, "For the good that I will do, I do not. But the evil that I will not do, that I practice. Now, if I do what I will not do, then it's no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me." Now, St. Paul said this. It's in Romans chapter 7, 19 and 20. And you read that Romans 7, and he talks about he does things he doesn't want to do, but he doesn't do things that he wants to do. And he certainly knew something about the condition of mankind. Because when I read that, I said, you know, I don't think he was an alcoholic, but he certainly understood the addiction of passion, the addiction of addiction, or the process of addiction. Okay, A, step one, we admitted we're powerless over alcohol, but our lives have become unmanageable. In Orthodoxy, we would say that we admitted we're powerless over the effects of sin. In other words, you know, we are born into a broken world, okay? And we all have things about ourselves that we wish were just a little bit different. We wish we could be better human beings, better creatures, closer to Christ, more humble, more tolerant, you know, more loving, more faithful, with less of the characteristics that we have that sometimes are separate us from God. But it also, there's a promise that he made in Corinthians that there's no temptation that God allows that we cannot overcome with his help. And the only thing that keeps us from accepting his help is fear and pride. But only through admission of the fact that we are powerless over the sin and that we need God's help is the only way that we can actually get his help. Because as long as we're doing it ourselves, and we think we don't need God, then we are actually struggling in vain. And there's a nice story in 2 Kings 5, 1 through 15 about Naaman, who was a general in the Syrian army, and he had leprosy, which was a very serious deal back then. So he was told to go to Isaiah, to the prophet of the Israelites. And he went. And Elijah told him, he said, "Well, look," he said, "go down to the Jordan River and wash in the Jordan River." Well, Naaman, you know, he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to go down there and wash in the Jordan River. He said, "He's crazy. I'm not going to go down there." And he was going to go back to Syria. Well, his servant, he said, "Naaman, you know, go down and wash yourself in the river. You know, do what the man said to do." He finally admitted, "Okay, there's nothing I can do. I'm powerless over this thing. I'll do anything that I have to do to get healed." He goes down to the river, he jumps in the river, he comes out clean. Okay? So Naaman was healed. Now Samson, he didn't live. Okay? Samson was a womanizer and wound up with Delilah. Okay? And you know the story. And he wound up, you know, it wound up costing Samson his life. Okay, because of the situation that he got himself into because of his womanizing with Delilah. Okay, so sometimes we listen and sometimes we don't. Now, Samson, of course, is one of the minor prophets and a very, very great man and obviously a saint. But nonetheless, you know, he had a serious problem because he did not follow the directions that he was receiving. Step one becomes a process of surrender, okay? And we surrender one day at a time. Surrendering one time, it's not good. Surrender becomes a daily process and it's a program working one day at a time. Now, David... King David, he recognized that Goliath was bigger than him, and he was afraid of Goliath. He knew Goliath could kill him very easily, but then, you know, through prayer, he realized that he could defeat Goliath with God's help, and so with faith in his heart, he went out and, of course, he slew Goliath. Okay, well. Step two is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. Now, this gets, I won't go into this discussion, we don't really have time, about the higher power and God's good orderly direction, because it gets into a whole another discussion. But step two for the Orthodox Christian is that we came to believe that the one true God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, could restore us to spiritual wellness and sanity. Okay? So we believe that we worship the true God, and that we don't have the confusion that a non-Christian would have or a non-Orthodox would have. In John 6:63, it says that it's the spirit that gives life, it's the flesh that cannot help us. It's saying that we need God. Of course, the insanity of the addict is the first drink, the first drug, the first flirt, the first bite of sugar, the first web page or moment of anger. There are more addictions than just the biological ones that we take through our mouth or through our arm or whatever. There's ones such as jealousy, such as anger, you know, rage, all these kind of things. And the dependency itself, as we were talking about this morning, goes beyond simply drinking alcohol or the particular behavior. It goes something down deep into the core of man. And that's what the healing must take place, is deep inside of our souls. And we have to learn to about reliance rather than defiance. We have to begin to rely or to become God-dependent rather than alcohol or drug-dependent. But there is a moment of clarity. Okay, you know, it says in the prodigal son, that the prodigal son's out, he was feeding the swine, you know, and it says, and he came to his senses. He had a moment of clarity. Something said, hey, come on, wake up here. You know, there's something here, you know, that you're missing. And so he had a moment, he says, you know, wow, you know, I've really gotten myself into a deal here. You know, I've got to go back to my father's house. Okay, he had that moment of clarity. Dependent upon the Father. Okay. Now, AA seeks God's power, but it impersonalizes God. Now, oftentimes people in AA do free. I don't attack AA. I'm not attacking AA. I'm pointing this out, though, that people in AA sometimes forget that the roots of AA and the roots of the 12 steps are scriptural. They're biblical. They come straight out of Christianity. At lunch, we were talking about the Oxford groups, which is really where AA began in 1935. When one AA guy, there was a member of the Oxford group, went and talked to, based upon spiritual principles of absolute love and selflessness and helping the other, went to try to help this other alcoholic to get sober in New York City. In 1934, this happened. And then, so this guy, Bill Wilson, okay, the first guy was Ebby T. And then he got Bill Wilson sober. Bill Wilson went to Akron, Ohio a few months later on some business and got a medical doctor called Dr. Bob Smith, into recovery in Akron. Well, but they were a member of this program called the Oxford Groups. Well, they stayed in the Oxford Groups for another three, and these Oxford Groups were based upon, they were started by a guy called Frank Buchanan. And Frank Buchanan was an evangelical Christian. He was an American. He's a wealthy American. He lived between New York City and England, and that's why hence the name Oxford. And they believed that they could change the world through practicing ancient Christian spirituality. So they studied ancient Christian spirituality. Now, how they missed the Orthodox Church, I don't know. They may have rejected it because of the religious aspects of it. They may not have known about it. Somehow, they didn't get into Orthodoxy, but they took many of the things from the Fathers and incorporated them into the Oxford Group movement's beliefs. And it was evangelical. It was, you know, all different denominations were in these Oxford Groups. Well, so these two alcoholics get sober in the Oxford Groups, and they start helping other alcoholics. Well, about two or three years later, the Oxford Group started to complain because they were helping alcoholics and not other people. And then so Bob Smith and Bill Wilson, they said, hey, you know, we just want to help alcoholics. So they split from the Oxford Groups and started what we know today as Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? So the steps and that, it all comes straight out of the Scriptures. It's all scripturally oriented. In the Orthodox Church, we call upon God by name. The problem is in the church, we come into the church and we think, oh, you know, I'm Orthodox, and you know, so I've got all the answers here and everything, you know, and I might have a degree in theology, whatever, okay. But if we don't put that stuff into practice, practical practices, spirituality, if we don't practice our own faith, okay, then we really don't gain very much from it. So sometimes there's very little spiritual growth. There's a certain arrogance that comes with high religions. Roman Catholics have it, Orthodox have it, Episcopalians have it. We get arrogant because we think we belong to a certain religion, that we got the whole thing, you know. And it's not the case. We know where it's at, but we don't know how to get it. And that's a problem for us sometimes. God's divine energy, what the Protestants call grace, you know, we call it grace too. Divine energies are available to everybody. Okay, they're God meets us where we are. He finds us in the worst places where the church won't go to. God goes there and he finds people and he brings them out of there. And sometimes by his grace, he puts them in the church. Okay, or he puts them in where he wants them to be. Both AA and church are very good prescriptions for obtaining relationship with God and grace. And I was going to ask a question, do we ever arrive? Do we ever become completely whole? Well, not in this life, at least not most people. I believe it's a matter of depth. AA is not meant as a stopping point. It's not. We don't arrive in AA. AA is intended to give us a way to heal so we can go on and to live a normal life. AA itself encourages us, okay, to find out more about religion, to explore religion, to, if we have a religion, to go back to the religion. You can read it on page 28 in the big book. Also, step 2 of the 12th book. And it calls for ongoing spiritual growth. Matthew 6:34 says, Take no thought of tomorrow, for tomorrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Today, the evil of today is sufficient. One of the basic recovery principles that we have is living one day at a time. We have to not just stay sober one day at a time, or not just drink a drug one day at a time, but to live a spiritual life one day at a time. Yes?
Question. Working the steps, you always hear like, I'm working step one, therefore I can't go to step two yet, and I've got to work on step one for a month. For me, I kind of feel like I can do a number of this. I mean, I'm kind of always doing different, but I wonder what it means, like, doing the steps. Because, you know, you make a decision and you're thinking, well, how do you stand on that one point? It's kind of like something you have to revisit every single day. I'm just wondering if you could address what that means, doing.
I rephrase that. Okay, I rephrase it from doing to living. Okay, because AA, it says in the big book that AA is a design for better living. Okay, and so we learn how to live better. So if I want to live better, and of course it says that these are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Okay, that means that we incorporate these into our lives, into the way we live, into the way we think, into the way we act, into who we are. Okay,
I just wondered about the differentiation between one step and the next one. Like, you don't move on to the 4 steps, you've done 1, 2, and 3.
It says that we took these steps piecemeal. Okay, in the literature itself, I think Bill Wilson said that we take them piecemeal. We do one, a little bit of one, and sometimes we do a little bit of another one. You know, if you read the steps, it's real hard, you know, not to jump around in there. Okay, now that's not to say that you shouldn't study them in order. Okay, I think for new people, I think it's extremely important that they have a clear understanding, you know, about steps 1, steps 2, steps 3, and to avoid like working a 4th and 5th step, okay, until after they've been sober for a while, and really understand, you know, that the 3rd step is about the 2nd step, which is about the 1st step, okay, so that when they take the 4th step, they take it in an honest and realistic way. They actually begin, because in steps 5 and 6 and 7, there's a whole process of change that begins. And unless they're living one day at a time from step 3, then they're not gonna be able to make that change, because you know, when to remove the character defects that we have to do that in the now. We have to do it in today, because today is the day that I live. Today is the day that I am. Okay. Does that make sense? I apologize for if we're going through that too quickly. It's but we're gonna cover a lot of that in the rest of the presentation.
but ideally you're not doing it by yourself. You're working with a sponsor and you're in
your group.
Not just you reading and trying to put it into practice.
Yeah, and in Romania, see, and believe it, you know, the priest over there understand all this stuff really well. What we're trying to get the priest to do, okay, is to organize the steps so that when they get somebody in the village who has a drinking problem, they can say, okay, now this is how we begin. First, you know, you recognize that you have this problem, okay? And then to begin to work the steps slowly. But it doesn't mean that they haven't already been going to confession or trying to change their life or praying and doing all these other kind of things, maybe all their life, okay? They just happen to become alcoholics. And so it's just a different approach to doing the same things they've been doing with the concept that they have a disease called alcoholism and that they cannot safely drink alcohol. And that, you know, just because they stop drinking for a period of time, they cannot go back to it again. See, that's the hook with the whole deal over there. Because they think, well, I haven't had a drink for 6 months, or we had a guy come, had not had a drink for 19 years, okay? And I've talked to many people in Romania, okay? And they're essentially working the 12 steps, okay, who stand sober. Something inside of them recognize that they cannot drink alcohol. They're already doing, you know, they're already dependent upon God. They believe in God. They're dependent upon God because it's just part of being Orthodox. It's just part of the tradition. And about the, you know, every time you see the Lord's Prayer, you know, you're working step three, essentially. And confession and all this is a part of who we are. It's just a basic thing, you know, to go to confession, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 times a year.
Sorry, one last thing is that part of the problem that I had was I thought, well, I'm Orthodox and I know, you know, God knows me, I know God, I love God more than anything else in my life. But do I ask Him to join me in my recovery? No, I haven't done that because I don't, like, sit there with a list of things. I mean, I don't really pray to God for stuff, you know. I don't say, God, can you please be with me today? I mean, I don't do that. But with recovery, I have to do that. But I didn't do that for a while. Kind of like, hey, I'm Orthodox. I know about God. There was that pride.
Yeah, that's the arrogance. That's the arrogance I was talking about. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So.
And we never really know God. You know, there's this Orthodox theologian. Gosh, he just died here not too long ago. He was Greek. Why? I had not intended to talk about this guy. Not Stan Lyon. He taught at Holy Cross for many years. No, John Romanides.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah. And Romanides, he said, not only can we not know God, okay, we can't even imagine God. Because God is other, you know. And because we're created, he's not created. He's you know, it's like a cow, you know. There was a cow, and it was standing alongside the fence, and it was eating grass. Okay, and so here come a farmer in his car, his pickup truck, and he come up to the gate with the cow. You know, the cow was standing next to the gate by the fence, and he was eating the grass. And the sun was shining; it was a beautiful day. And so the farmer clicked his thing here, and the gate opened up, and the farmer drove through the gate. The gate closed by itself. And the farmer went on up to the house. Well, you know, the cow keeps on eating the grass. Now, you know, maybe the cow heard the truck. Maybe the cow knew something went past it. You know. But the cow didn't understand that if there was a farmer in the truck. Maybe might have. But he sure didn't understand that opening. Okay? Didn't understand the truck. Okay. And really probably didn't understand anything about that whole process. Okay. More like the cow. We know there's, you know, gosh, there's something floating around, you know. We know the grass is good, the sun is shining. You know, things are cool, but, you know, we don't really understand them as much as we think sometimes. Okay. Step three. We made a decision to turn the world life over to the care of God, if you understand. The Orthodox step three is made a decision to turn the world life over to the care of God as He reveals Himself in the Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So we put a definition. And this is what Romanides was talking about too. You know, how we understand God. Okay, but God is actually beyond our comprehension. Although we can know Him, and that's what the difference is. One of the things about our church that's so nice is that we're taught to experience God, to know God through experience. Less rational, more experiential. You know, and that's me, you know. I try to understand things and I get confused sometimes, okay? But when I go to the, it's like when I went into the chapel up here, I felt it. I knew, you know, the God's here, you know. And I mean, his presence. Okay? I mean, just, you know, now is he here? Well, you know, there's a divine energy and there's all this stuff, you know. And what I'm going to say is, you know, it's an experiential thing. Okay? And we know him that way. And when we know him that way, you can't move it, you can't shake it, you can't get rid of it. Okay? Because once you know the truth, you can never go back. Because then you know you're turning your back on yourself, on God, on everything.